As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Strangers in the night.
So I went into
exchanging
a few weeks ago. I was in a went into a record shop that's playing this brilliant album.
Yeah.
And so I went up to the desk and said, can I, what's that? It's amazing. And they said, oh, it's our record of the week by a band called Snapped Ankles.
Yeah.
And I winced because, like, anyone who's been there with, you know, Lawrence and 2005 Lions and Cipriani, and I winced, but I still bought it. It's brilliant. But I just wish they changed their name, because all I can think of is that Camille Lopez and Lawrence doing his ankle in Cipriani. It's horrible. It's a horrible name, but it's a great album.
That's not bad. That's quite good. Line, actually, leave that in. That's better than anything we've come up with so far. Hello, everybody. This is my first take, and if you believe that, you believe anything. Welcome to The Ruck, the Times and Sunday Times weekly rugby podcast. Thanks for listening and tuning in and downloading us. Today, we're going to be reacting to some of your reactions to us that we've had in. We sit here in our London studios in the wake of what I consider to be one of the greatest weekends of European rugby. All sorts of great games. Exeter winning away at Montpellier. Wasps coming back to form. La Rochelle, where have they come from? Suddenly playing magical rugby. And controversy all the way as normal. Dylan Hartley, Joe Marlon, Nathan Hughes involved in it. So too John Hardy and Marlon Yard, who didn't play but is involved in controversy. And tragedy of all tragedies, the All Blacks lost. That'll take about 2% of the population, who may now stop fawning all over them. Our panel today, no Owen Slot today, so it should all go well. We've got the Dog Man, Adam Hathaway, after his performance on the weekend in Claremont, also known now as the Duck Man. We went to, I ate with him 7 times. He had 6 duck main courses and 1 poulet when he'd had a duck starter. Latest news from the Greyhound tracks, Jack?
Not great last week, second and a third. What we're actually going to do now is we're going to have a bit of a recruitment drive. We're going to do what the Scots are doing, and we're going to go round the world looking for English qualified greyhounds.
Okay, fair enough. Well, you've got to take some action, because it's not good enough, and I think you know that. And your vote of confidence from the chairman is about the same as the Everton chairman. It's I think those dogs have got to go, and we need proper world-class practitioners. We've also got Alex Lowe from The Times. Alex was at WASC yesterday and opened up his report with a baffling thing about high fives. I didn't quite get that, but I think in the end, I think he got the score right and WASC won. Welcome, Alex.
We've
also got even bigger Al Dimmock from Rugby World. Al's going to give us a slant on everything, but we're going to ask him about drugs in Scotland for a start, so that'll probably trip him up. Guys, where were we on the weekend? What did we love? Adam, apart from the duck, also that rather comely waitress you were talking to in that Australian bar. What else did you see that excited you?
That bottle of stuff the waiter bought out for lunch on Saturday as well, whatever it was, the fire water.
Yeah.
On the pitch, well, Northampton gave it a bit of a crack in Claremont, but they were never going to win that game. I think we're going to discuss the main talking point of that match later on, which was obviously the Hartley yellow card. But great occasion, great ground. It's the first time I've been there. I thought it was fantastic.
If you had a choice and you could only watch one team in one place for the rest of your life, okay, you'd be bored by the end. But Claremont would be a fair old place. Just a magnificent place. I got a lot of stick on social media for buying a Claremont top from the from the souvenir shop, but it was freezing there and I'd left my fleece in the hotel, so I think it was perfectly reasonable.
You did look like a cheerleader though.
I know, I was one of the Légionnards. Yeah. Anyway, at least my boys won. Alex, Wasps at Coventry, revival or just not too soon to say?
No, I think it points in the right direction for them. They, all the things that hadn't been working for them in the five defeats, that they weren't getting over the gain line, they weren't physical enough, and it meant that their back line weren't able to penetrate. That all went well for them, all behind Nathan Hughes, big thunderous carries from him. Defensively, they were really strong. They smothered Marcus Smith, and they obviously learned their lesson from 5 weeks ago when Quinns won at the Rico. So I think it's been coming together. They weren't too bad in Ulster, but they should have held on for a bonus point there. So it's positive signs. But the highlight for me was Exeter. I think of a pretty special weekend. They really look like they're English champions, but they really look like they're now ready to make a mark on Europe, which is great to see because they've got some wonderful players.
Thanks, Alex. Al, I think you were getting animated there with something that Arthur was saying. Let's go to Al from Rugby World.
Alex, you talked about containing Marcus Smith there. How important do you think that is actually for his career trajectory? Because it seems so far like he's been running on water. And a lot of people have talked about how fantastic he is. But it's important for a player's development to have a hiccup here or there. How good for him do you think that game was?
It's massively important because he's an 18-year-old kid who's come straight from schoolboy rugby and has had a very good season. No one's really put him under the kind of pressure that Wasps did yesterday, and they charged down a kick of his. They were rushing up so quickly in defence that almost as soon as he got the ball, he was squeezed. He had to make decisions he hasn't had to make before. He's 18 years old, and he's a long way from being the finished article, and those experiences in that kind of an intensity are vital for his development. Otherwise, it's not going to be a cakewalk forever.
I think life's not a rehearsal. I don't think he should be there. I don't think he should have been there from the start. And it's one of those things where English rugby wets itself about youngsters when they should never have been there. Al?
Well,
says he, not giving anyone a chance to respond.
Yeah, there's one thing that was a highlight for me at the weekend, and it was the performance of La Rochelle. And everyone looked at the way that they performed in the top 14 last season, climbing all the way up there and being in the mix for the title. No one expected it, and you thought we've seen this before in French rugby, where you see a team like Oyonnax climb up, and it's all the passion of a small club getting bigger and riding the crest of a wave. But this season they've kicked on again, La Rochelle. That's two wins for them in their pool, and they're playing some phenomenal stuff. And Victor Vito has to be one of the form players in Europe at the moment. He is outstanding, and it's not just we're the highlights YouTube generation where we see stuff getting shared viral and it's lots of nice offloads, but Victor Vito is so much more than that. He's not just your flashy number 8 that comes from the other side of the world and plays Harlem Globetrot stuff. He actually puts a shift in, and it's fantastic to watch.
Very good point. Yes,
Steve, on your point about Marcus Smith, first of all, he wouldn't be playing if Kachukidis hadn't had a horrible throat injury. And secondly, if you only ever pick players when they're ready to play at the very highest level, you'd never pick anybody.
Yes, you would.
Well, how do you get ready if you can't?
Because first of all, you've got an under-20s team to cut your teeth. Secondly, you've got a bench that you can come on in weak games at the end to play 20 minutes. They're just to chuck a guy in, say, oh, he's 18, but he's doing his best. Why not find someone who's good?
Well, I think he is good. He was just put under pressure on Sunday. And even after being charged down, he wasn't afraid to take the ball to the line. He was putting players through gaps. I just think he was asked some questions which he probably hasn't really been asked so far this season. But I don't think he's been out of place.
But I also believe that he will be a better player because he's had that
Absolutely,
pressure. Because
yeah.
You have to learn. If you play only 15 minutes here, 15 minutes there against weaker opposition, then you'll only get used to playing against weaker opposition. So he'll have woken up today and gone, geez, I was in a hell of a battle there, I feel rubbish. But actually, he'll learn from that. And I suppose we've all got to stumble at some point to I hate the phrase, but take the learnings, is what everyone keeps saying.
Okay, I'll give you two words then to dynamite your argument about, it's too early for him, but don't worry, he learned. Matthew and Tate. Thank you. Guys, heard from our great colleague Mark Gillingham this morning, ordering us, really, and he's quite right, not to forget Treviso this weekend, Benetton Treviso. They took Toulon all the way, played magnificently under Kieran Crowley, the coach, obviously with Conor O'Shea cracking the whip there too, and lost dramatically and horribly to a last-minute kick. That's fair enough from Mart, isn't it? We should... we've made fun of... not made fun, but we've really written off the Italians. But what a great result it could have been, and in fact still is.
I think you see the influence that Conor O'Shea is having on Italian rugby now in his
in his second year then, he always said that he wanted to use one main club as a sort of nursery for his players, and it seems to be paying off.
Well, the other side of that as well is you have to acknowledge the form that Zebre have shown in the Pro 14, and whatever you think of the Pro 14 and the way it is, and it's an unusual year with the South Africans coming in, but Zebre, they've had a lot of tumultuous times off the pitch, struggling to pay players. This season, I was speaking to George Biagi, the captain, there a couple of weeks ago, and he was saying that a little bit of stability, and suddenly everyone goes, actually, Italian players aren't completely terrible when they get their head down and everything's sorted out. The biggest problem with Italian rugby is the fact that they've got silos here, there and everywhere. So they've got the academy in Parma, which is where Zebre, but Treviso have always been the powerhouse team of the two. It looks like they're getting their act together now, and you're right, Conor O'Shea must have been toiling away. Him and Stephen Aboud, who looks after the youth systems there, it's starting to pay a little bit of dividends. Obviously a long way to go.
Another one of our great followers and great mates, Big Sherry, Andrew Sheridan, down at Bath, has said that don't forget to reflect Joy Neville, who was on the touchline at
Montpellier
yesterday for a great game, and is going to be the assistant referee for three international matches. That great news. Good luck to her. Al, can only be good.
Absolutely, and it's a promotion system that you want to see in rugby, and it's not just what you can do is just drop someone into small games and just leave it at that, but actually they're pulling through. Joy will run in touch for France versus Japan in the last game of the autumn series, and actually that is such a big occasion, it can only be good for her. It seems to be a bit of a theme that we're coming around to, but it's promotion and it's not just token.
Let's talk about discipline, I suppose, but also social drugs. John Hardy allegedly is up for taking cocaine.
Well, so what it is the SRU are having an internal inquiry. They've pulled him out of all rugby, so it's actually the SRU rather than Edinburgh. So the High Hegians there have decided that they want to have an investigation. They have not released official statement. They've a lot of questions have been put to the SRU and they've not denied them. However, what they have said is that the allegations that they do have are extremely serious and that they have to look into them. It could be the end of a career, potentially, at least in that part of the world. Whatever happens is John Hardy must have serious questions about his social life for something to go to this length and for it to come out as public as it has in such a short period of time. The other side of things as well is that we need to start getting clarity on this from people, because this is how speculation goes. You talked about people talking to you on social media, taking them out. This is how rumours start swirling. You'd like to see a union come out on the front foot and say, this is what we're investigating, this is what we're looking at, innocent until proven guilty, whatever we're looking at, and if it all comes out in the wash that he's fine, fantastic. But there will be a point where we'll have to be, whatever happens now, he will have to be rehabilitated into our system after this.
I was amazed it took until Sunday for it to come out what he was being charged for, because I think it was our colleague Mark Palmer in the Scottish Sunday Times who managed to dig out the fact there was a cocaine thing. There's nothing else came out on Saturday.
What did he do, and did he do it saga with Marland Yard? We don't actually know. Did he do anything more than miss a session or half a session? Again, it's a lack of information that makes us kind of speculate, isn't it? Should they not have said this is exactly what you did?
Well, Alex was at that game. I think he can explain that.
Yeah, they definitely should, because in the wake of the John Hardy announcement, where it was a terse statement with no further comment, Harlequins then did something very similar pre-match on Sunday, which immediately makes people think this is something incredibly serious. Potentially, there's a legal issue involved if they're not going to say anything. And then, during the course of the game, I hear that actually he was dropped for not turning up for the captain's run training session on Saturday, which might be quite a big deal on the eve of a match, but it's not that big an issue. And if the club had just come out and said, well, we've dropped him because he didn't turn up for the training session, he's back in next week, it's clarity, it's done and dusted, and it stops people from speculating over the truth. And even when we tried to put the facts to the club they weren't even prepared to talk about it. And I just think that's it's in some ways it's unfair on Marlon Yard because it allows people to insinuate things that aren't there.
Okay, just one before we move on. Just you were there yesterday, Joe Marler, involved in foul play. Nathan Hughes allegedly. Yeah. Mike Brown a little bit rash with his deliberate knock-on. But what did you make of Marler and Hughes?
So the Marler one was, it was almost a case of, if you remember 5 weeks ago, Marler wound up James Haskell and Haskell ended up getting sin-binned. On this occasion, it was Will Rowlands who just wouldn't release Joe Marler. Joe Marler's fuse was lit and he, not with a huge amount of force because you can't do it, but he was standing up, Rowlands was on the floor, and he dropped down a forearm stroke elbow which connected with the side of Rowlands' head and he got a yellow card for it. It wouldn't have injured a rugby player, but it was a petulant and stupid thing to do, and because he connected with a forearm on the head, there's every chance that he might be cited. By the time you listen to this, the decision will probably have been made, but as I left the stadium I thought that there's a big chance here that he could be cited for that. Nathan Hughes, who had a superb game, did connect with Marcus Smith's head with a sort of a straight arm, swinging arm, and that's exactly the kind of thing that the disciplinary authorities take a dim view of, which is why that case will be being looked at in the same way as the Dylan Hartley one was being looked at.
Let's just go back to the actual play. La Rochelle has given rugby a team on the west coast of France. Big Al's picked up Victor Vito. Who do you pick out, and what was the memorable rugby magic that we saw in Clermont?
Well, the bad moment in Clermont was the injury to Camille Lopez, which looked an absolute shocker. The standout player was there, big number six, Ken Corriette, I think it is.
Ken Corriette,
Thank you very much for that. Yeah. I'd never seen him play before, to be honest, but he put in a massive shift. That game, it seemed that, especially when Clermont scored the second try, when Hartley was in the bin, that although Saints were brave and Courtney Laws in particular sort of fronted up, they were never going to win. They were never going to win that.
Just think how good they were without Wesley Fofana. Yeah. Judiciel Cancorier, that's maybe not the spelling, but we will be hearing that name in the future.
There is another thing from Clermont as well, and we'll get to why Rabah Slimani was such a pivotal figure in this game because of the part he played, or I didn't have much choice in it, but the part he played in the Dylan Hartley carding. But he gave Northampton Saints such a torrid time in the scrum, and he's worth looking at, Rabah Slimani. He moved to Clermont this year. He was a big signing for them. A lot of money was being chucked at him to move out there. Clermont have had a poor season by their standards, but what he does and what he makes so valuable is that he does this move in the scrum. I've spoken to a few scrummaging coaches about this, called the crank, where he pulls someone in tight with his binding arm, and if things aren't going his way, he can yank them down. It's a way of milking penalties. He's a squat figure. He's hard to scrummage against anyway. But with weapons like that in his arsenal, he becomes a really difficult player to play against, and particularly if referees won't stamp out on that kind of behaviour. So when he has that and he's already difficult to scrummage against, you can see why he was incredibly frustrating for that Northampton Saints front row in the game.
Let's just
clarify this. So, Rabah, if you're listening, it was Alan Dimmock who called you a cheat, not any of the others. It's Mr. Alan Dimmock, and we'll put in his email and phone number at the
address,
end of the program.
Yeah.
Is he the only one who does the cracking? Surely that would be a common technique.
It's quite a standard practice, but I suppose in the bad boy Olympics he would be winning gold for it, because he is a firm proponenter of the crank.
And why is he so good at it? Because he's squat and strong.
I think he's got short levers as well. Now binding can be a bit of an issue, but you know, he's also got a head and neck like a triangle as well, which means that makes it hard to scrummage against. It also means that you can struggle to get an angle on him if you want to turn in or out, if you were so inclined as a scrummager. But because of that paired with his short levers means that he just seems to be better at it than anyone else.
Okay, let's top this propping love in you.
Tell me where you play down.
Yeah, but yeah. And let's just remember that Munster and Leinster, possibly not quite as noisily, but very, very efficiently, still going strong. And we're just going to conclude the European roundup of a fantastic weekend by just asking you, Al, Glasgow again. So many high hopes, now almost out of it by the look of it.
Well, they come unstuck for the second weekend in a row, having holes in their defence. A lot of people will say it's fantastic to see Stuart Hogg back, almost like he wasn't away when he took his try, managed to race in and catch the ball just before it dribbled out the back of the try area and dotted it down. Seymour and Finn Russell doing what they do on the front foot, that's all well and good with Glasgow. And with the new coaching setup they've got there, stuff like that impresses fans. That's great. But when you've got a leaky defence two weekends in a row, they're almost completely out of contention now in Europe because of that. One person in the Leinster ranks that you'd like to give a shout out to in classic radio style is Scott Fardy for Leinster. He only played 55 minutes, but I've heard a lot of people talk about what he can, the hardness that he can bring with Leinster. And when you consider all the talents that they have in their back row, and then you've got someone like him coming in with his experience, they could be a real threat, Leinster, this season.
Yeah, obviously. Just one final word, and that's about the Welsh teams. Llanelli, Scarlets, it was a massive game for them at home against Bath. I know it was wet and maybe didn't suit their style, but Bath are undermanned at the moment. And really crushing that they lost that. I thought they had to win, absolutely had to win. Ospreys brave and bold against Saracens. I thought they were terrific. I just think Saracens lapsed a little bit, but good and bad for Wales there, because the tournament's going to be much better when they get true contenders. That's Europe.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Okay, the pulse is quickening for the autumn internationals now. All four home countries have got big games. Although, actually, England not as big as some, because they're playing Argentina, Australia and Samoa. Wales are playing the whole shooting match, South Africa, New Zealand and Australia. Eddie Jones' team is out, Alex, on Thursday, or his squad of 30-odd is out.
34, I believe.
34, who's he going to rest? Who's he going to pick? Is he going to keep the infant school team he took to Argentina? Is he going to get rid of any of the old guard? How do you see it, and what's the general principles that Eddie's going to stick to?
The main principle for Eddie is that he never sticks to any principles.
Yeah.
He changes. He genuinely changes with the wind. So his plan at the start of the season was to rest some of the key lions. He told Anthony Watson, for example, that he wouldn't play in the autumn, since when he's lost Jack Noel, Marlon Yard has failed to turn up for training. You know, those kind of things can force him to change his mind. One of the things Eddie said was that life is full of contradictions, and so is he.
Yeah.
But if you take as a starting point that Anthony Watson has said he's not expecting to play in the autumn, he started all three Lions tests. Therefore, Owen Farrell, Elliot Daly, Maro Itoje. However, Farrell has been rested a bit. Daly's been rested a bit. Itoje hasn't. So I would expect them to be involved in the squad, but only because Eddie wants to have them in training rather than playing. I think some of the players who made a mark in Argentina will be in. I think there are players who came through that tour and have kicked on brilliantly, like Nick Izzieck, who's had a superb start to the season. I think he'll be there. Piers Francis seems to be a favourite of Eddie Jones's. I'll be interested to know what he does about the tens, because in that last training camp Marcus Smith was in, Jonathan Joseph wasn't in, but without Ben Teo and Manu Tuilagi, Jonathan Joseph would have to be involved, I would have thought. And there are some prop interesting prop situations. Ellis Genge has been magnificent for Leicester. And if Mako, another who played all three Lions tests, was to be rested, they'd have Marla disciplinary hearing notwithstanding, and Ellis Genge. And then on the other side, Sinclair's banned, so they got Dan Cole. He loves Harry Williams, but is there room for another?
Adam, what are you looking for? What are the principles, and any bolters or any key men who are going to be kicked out?
Well, it's very hard to find a bolter that either who wasn't on the Lions tour, wasn't injured in the summer, and wasn't in Argentina, because that makes up about 150 players. If I was Eddie Jones, I just want to win the next match. And frankly, if I paid 113 quid to go to Twickenham and Owen Farrell and Maro Itoje aren't playing, I'd be a bit brassed off.
I think that's a very good point too.
Good point.
I mean, James Haskell could be a casualty here, because they've now got Underhill, Tom Curry. We talk about Don Armand, brilliant in the back row. Courtney Laws has been so good this season. I mean, Northampton have had up and down, but the one constant for them has been Courtney Laws, who's just been extraordinary. He has to play somewhere, second row, back row. If he's back row, then he's at six. It means that there'll be no room for Chris Robshaw.
Well, a former World Cup winning England coach in one of the papers this morning said that they've got to make their mind up about Laws, whether he plays second row or six, but Clive Woodward said he'd stick him in the second row and keep Robshaw as his number one, number six. And I'm inclined to go with that. I know that winds you up, Steve.
Al, England, what are you looking for?
Alex mentioned there that Harry Williams and how much they rate him, and I know that in Exeter they've seen him come on leaps and bounds since he signed for them, and he's done well on tour. They see him as a real thinker. By all accounts, he's very good in analysis. I know that's not the same as being out in the field, but this is his opportunity to kick on, because as you say, Steve, they're not playing against the mightiest sides in the world, so it gives a good opportunity for someone like him to kick on, someone like Ellis Genge to really start racking up minutes, and those are the kind of players that in 2 years time will be invaluable to England. The other one as well is Don Armand is the one that's really in form and in vogue at the moment. It'd be interesting to see where he can actually squeeze in, because it's a similar situation to Mark Wilson. As much as a stalwart as he is, as much as everyone is proud of what he has done at Newcastle Falcons, bringing these people into the squad to train is a nice doff of the cap, but where do you actually put them out in the field when it comes to test time?
I don't know what Eddie's got against Armand. I mean, he was man of the match at the Premiership final. We went to their pre-Argentina training camp. Eddie, he just put in a staggering performance at Twickenham. Eddie said he doesn't work hard enough. He got one game in Argentina off the bench. Didn't make the last training squad. Now he's playing out of his skin again. I don't expect to see him in it.
I just think there are two different styles of six that he's looking at, and it's the Itoje Laws option at six, it's the other option, and that's where he's someone like Armand is up against Robshaw, and at the moment Eddie would go with Robshaw because he's been won over by him, having dissed him horribly during the World Cup. He's been won over by him, and then that leaves at seven. I don't think Haskell's in the picture now, so it leaves Sam Underhill to perform that kind of big tackling destroyer role at seven.
I think Underhill's got a chance. As for Watson, England never let him go at fullback. Warren Gatland did a job for England, because they stuck him at fullback and said go and play. And I'd like to see him for one of the rest him for two. I'd like to see him out there, because Mike Brown, for me, should not be in the squad. I think he's struggling badly. He's not offering anything in attack, and he's a bit of an empty shell of all his great years. Robshaw would never be in my squad, and I'm serious.
You've been saying that for 5 years.
I've been saying it for 5 years. And did they do well in the last World Cup or not? Don Armand is a completely different class. Come on, let's get real about it. There are too many favourites in the squad, too many old contemptibles who he cannot bring himself to get rid of. Ellis Genge, you've got a massive problem if you bring him in, because every single scrum coach in the Premiership says he's illegal, and they time and time again. And if you put him in now, you run the risk against France or a scrummaging team of him really, really being found out. He's not a flanker, he's a tight head prop. Ollie Woodburn, if he's not in the squad, it means that England should stop putting out the names of coaches and what games they go to. Because if Woodburn's not in, they are going with blindfolds on and they should not even bother to watch club rugby. Totally different class to Marlon Yard, whatever he did. So I hope that Eddie is bold. And instead of, I'm not saying he shouldn't pick experience, but only if it is still firing or basically there are some people there that maybe they got a permanent booking at Pennyhill Park if he still picks them. It's time to move on, but not to move on to pick 3 year olds. I'm sorry. Let's just move around the countries. Alex, possibly interesting combination for Ireland in the centre.
Yeah, so Gary Ringrose is injured for the autumn, and one of the options available to Joe Schmidt is to reunite Robbie Henshaw with Bundy Aki, the two the Connacht midfield who helped them win the Pro 12 as was. Bundy Aki's now qualified. Henshaw was brilliant for Leinster the other week, and that will give them a real heavy duty, big, powerful midfield. I'm interested too in James Ryan, the young Munster lock, who's on the Ireland radar, went on tour in the summer and a really good player there. So a few interesting selections for Joe Schmidt this autumn.
In Wales, as usual, there's a huge queue of people that people are punting up to play at fly half, which is all great as long as they make sure they pick Dan Bigger, who's way ahead of all that lot. Tremendous back division developing there, and a new kind of philosophy, all down to the front row. I mean, they're still struggling really to find a dominant tight end prop. They really are. But they've got the team, if everybody's fit, to win a couple of their games. Well, whether they do or not is another matter. But they've certainly got the skills and the talent, Jonathan Davis, in the backs for Wales. But absolutely ferocious autumn that they've given themselves.
Does the new WRU selection rule now allow them to pick Rhys Priestland when he was unavailable under the last rule? Because he was unavailable under Gatland's law, because Gatland didn't want to pick him. Now they've changed it. You have to have 60 caps, but if you were already outside the country, it doesn't count.
Adam?
And I don't know, but he's playing out of his skin at the moment.
He is. And if you've got Bigger and Priestland together, that's a hell of an option there at 10 and one on the bench. But Rhys Webb seems to have been done over by the rule, but actually, if my understanding of it's right, and someone can tweet in and tell me I'm wrong, but it seems like it might have played Rhys Priestland back into contention.
Yeah, if it's a clean sort of a clean slate, yeah.
It is. But you know, in this day and age, as I've written so many times, when you've got the whole thing distorted by vast salaries available, four times what you get in Wales in some cases, it is ridiculous to put up a barrier for any of your players. I'm afraid it is a fact of life. You cannot rule them out like that, because you can't expect people to have a quarter of the salary and turn down someone else. Simple as that.
And the players should have good enough agents to get it written into their contracts with these clubs that they are going to be able to go to the national training weeks or whatever.
Yeah.
Maybe take $5,000 a year off their salary or whatever it is.
But that's a great idea.
You can't deny them the chance to go down £500,000 a year.
Okay. The Scottish Revival, now in its 27th year, I think. But yeah. What's happening with them in the autumn?
Well, they're playing against Samoa, then they've got the All Blacks and Australia. But the big talking points for Scotland are the fact that Greg Laidlaw is out injured at the moment. He hurt himself playing for Claremont. John Barkley has had issues with concussion recently. And it begs the question, is who is Gregor Townsend's third choice in line for captaincy for Scotland? Is it Ryan Wilson, who's been captaining for Glasgow? Because Edinburgh have been running with Magnus Bradbury, who's had, well, disciplinary issues off the field. He hurt his head on a night out, and there's a lot of questions about what's going on there, whether he will retain the captaincy for Edinburgh. So you can't really turn there. Do you then look at Ryan Wilson, who's been playing in a Glasgow team who've been struggling in the European Cup? Or do you go to Johnny Gray, who hasn't been captaining this season, who's a bit of a sheepish lad, who does better when he gets his head down and gets on with the
job?
Who
do you have?
I think you've got to hope that John Barkley comes through fit. If you go with Ryan Wilson, he needs a bit of a talking to, but to be fair, he is getting selected. Anyway, with John Barkley out, he will probably be in the back row, so he's I'd imagine he's at the front of the queue.
And wasn't this the season that it was supposed to sort of lift off? Because Rennie's now in situ, Gregor's in situ. Isn't it just the next few months so vital for Scottish rugby?
It is. It also helps that some of the holes are getting filled in again, though, because it's hard to have the revival you talk about and the kick on when you don't have your best players playing. So it's fantastic for them that they have Stuart Hogg back, because then there are serious questions about who you play at fullback. The well ain't so deep in certain positions for Scotland. So having him and Finn Russell in makes those decisions to kick on that much better. It all comes down to style of play, because the way that Gregor coached with Glasgow is that he had contingency plans four phases into moves. And it'll be interesting to see how that beds in. It seemed to work for Scotland in the summer, but then, of course, they defeat Australia one weekend and then they lose to Fiji the next. They've got New Zealand second up. And that is the big benchmark, because if you're wrecked mentally after that one and then you go into Australia again, who have so many times been the bogey team, who knows what happens? It could change the complexion of that November.
Alex, the fact that Australia beat the All Blacks, surely England cannot still conceive of losing a game this autumn.
England should be better than Australia by a distance.
Okay, All Blacks with us soon. Al, they've got a massive squad there. What's behind that?
Well, there've been some changes. New Zealand like to do this thing where they bring apprentices with them over to the old world to get a bit of experience. It's what they did
the real world.
Yes,
I think you
exactly.
Mean.
Yeah. I mean, they did it with Rico Ioane, and look at how he's kicked on. He will now be the undeniable starter for them, a real threat on the wing. The biggest changes for them have been in their front row. They've got no Joe Moody at loose head, and they've got no Owen Franks at tight head, which means that they've got quite a few what you call unknowns. We don't see too much of the likes of Kane Hames, Nepo Lalala, Tim Perry is a new cap, Jeffrey Tumanga Allen. I mean, guys, I don't know how much you can tell me about these fellas, because there's not so much you can see from them. They've also got young Asafo Amua, who's the 20-year-old hooker.
He's unbelievable.
Who caught fire at the Junior World Cup. He scored a hat-trick in the final against England, as New Zealand absolutely spanked England in that final. He's been playing for Wellington. He's been scoring highlight reel tries for them, and he's in as an apprentice. But that's probably the real opportunity. They're having a regeneration there in the front row. You know, and when you've got someone like Offa Tungafasi, who will give you one monster hit a game, as he did against Dan Bigger against the Lions for the Blues, as he did at the weekend against Bernard Foley, that's fantastic. But how do these guys knuckle down in the scrum? And that's where the likes of Scotland and Wales will be looking at them and going, right, okay, we've got a real opportunity, because we don't know too much about these guys.
Blimey, that was good about the All Blacks. I'd never heard of half of that.
I suppose we all have to assume, because they're Kiwis, they're brilliant players, and we all have to bow down at the ups of All Black rugby.
Yeah. I will say that hooker, Al Moore, is he reminds me of Shout Brits. He's a bit more stocky and powerful, but he scores those tries, kind of X-factored. Yeah, for a hooker, great footwork, good player.
Okay, guys, listen, we just have to wrap up there, because Rabah Slamani's solicitor's trying to get through. he's actually holding on the line, but just look forward to where we're going on the weekend as professional journalists. Hathers, you're a pro. You, no doubt you're going to a big game.
Yeah, I'm going to Northampton Wasps, which would be quite interesting. Wasps.
I thought so. I thought you'd be going to a big
one.
Well,
that's where the big hitting journalists are going.
That's where the big one. Well, yeah. I'm going there, so the pros are all going there. Alex, I hear you're going to Denmark. Is that research in Denmark rugby?
It's a half term trip to Legoland.
Right, okay. No rugby element at all in that?
No.
Okay,
is it a rugby season?
Well, I don't know. I'm have to research. Maybe Denmark can be the next Germany.
Okay. Al, I hear you're bound for Scotland. Now, I've been talking to Mandy, your fiancé. I understand you're looking at venues for the wedding. Now, I'm sure, a man of your stature, you'll be starting off at castles, baronial halls, Rolls Royces, if not horse-drawn carriages. I'm sure you won't be putting in anything that could be called cheapskate in that. So what are your plans at the moment? What's your vision?
Bearing in mind I'm from Dundee as well, so actually a bottle of Bucky around the back would be a good reception, I find.
I just think that's offensive. I mean, your gorgeous bride, I think it's got to be full out.
Well, if we've got any sponsors that are listening that want to help pay for my wedding, that would be fantastic touch.
Okay, can you put that in there? Would they get a line in the top of the wedding? Would it be like the Coca-Cola wedding or something?
We could sell naming rights to my wedding. Okay. As long as it's not Weddingy McWedding Face or something like that. you can have it if you've got the right money.
Excellent. Well, two professionals are going out on the road to cover rugby. The rest nowhere, it seems. But thanks very much indeed, Alex, Adam and Al, for coming in. I hope you enjoyed it, and we'll be back next week. As we always say, thanks for downloading us, thanks for listening, thanks for all the input, and we'll be back with you next Monday. Totally, it'd be good without Slotty.
The train is now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, Road Station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.